Welcome to episode 437 of the Pop Culture Roundtable, the podcast that's only weaknesses are working too hard and caring too much. In this episode, we talk about the Great British Baking Show, The Duel, and business trends for 2021. I'm Andrew Sale.
I'm Lauren Rubin.
I'm Patrick Hill.
So shred all those other resumes, because it's time to give us the job.
You see, my weaknesses are really my strengths.
We like to kick every episode off by going around the table, which is where we talk about things that are new, fun, and noteworthy about our week. Patrick, why don't you tell everybody what happened this week?
Tapas day, right?
Did you say that the tapas are dead?
The tapas are dead.
I said that happened today, right?
Oh. See, Lauren forgot her microphone.
Yes.
She normally carries it with her to school in the morning in her lunchbox. She sets it up at the end of the day. We record. But she doesn't have, and so I can't understand her. Like, coming through this, like, plebeian, like, normal person microphone, like, I have no idea what she's saying. So
normal person microphone?
Yeah, it's just beneath all of this, you know.
I see, yes.
I apologize for bringing us all down a level today. It is my
Andrew,
fault.
Did you
bring us down a whole octave, in a good way. What'd you say, Patrick?
Can you hear Lauren talking? I still can't hear anything. It just sounds like a bunch of shit in the wind.
Okay. So, I thought you legitimately couldn't hear her audio. And I was sitting here like, oh, what? We've been recording this long and you didn't say anything?
Yeah.
In fairness, you also had mic trouble at the beginning.
I know.
You could not hear us, and yet you still kind of like told us a story.
That's because
to the point that you had convinced me you could hear us because you were still talking to us.
Well, me talking has no bearing on my ability to hear you.
But it made me realize that maybe you don't appreciate getting my feedback on everything that you say.
Well, let me tell you this. If I tried to talk and I couldn't hear myself talk, I promise you I'd be freaking out a lot more than I was.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Couple good things. One, I did watch all of Squid Game. Since the last time we talked, I think I mentioned last time I'd started episode one, I'd heard good things about it. It looked super cool. It had subtitles.
I don't think you had watched it at all last week.
No, that's what I'm saying. I had started it, but I saw the subtitles. And when I started it, it was like 10 o'clock at night. And there was no way I was reading subtitles at 10 o'clock at night.
They have it dubbed, don't they?
Yeah. You have subtitles turned on.
I was asking. I was like, I watched the first episode.
Yeah,
so.
it's dubbed.
When I turned it on, the dub wasn't turned on for me. But I already had subtitles on because Mackenzie keeps subtitles on everything, even English speaking shows.
Yeah.
So it went into the English subtitles, but there was no overdub. So gave up. But people continue to talk about it. People continue to see good things. We saw Netflix post their numbers for the first time ever, all of their actual watch time. And we've heard the conversation that it's a very good chance Squid Game is going to become the number one most streamed show on Netflix in history, which is just wild because it's a new show for these
and
reasons.
And it's a niche show. Like, it's not for everybody.
But apparently it's for everybody because it's going to become the most streamed show.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I think it's because it's also like in multiple languages and like, you know, like appeals to other countries, like more than some things maybe appeal to like specifically the U.S. Like Stranger Things is very like, I would say like U.S. centric references and everything.
Well, it's a fun workshop topic too. Like the prompt of the show, to be given that prompt and then to be asked the question, how would I respond to this situation? Leads to a lot of really great conversation and you know, thought behind it. And so I can see how people get really excited by the idea and latch on. And especially because it's all grounded in stuff that we really understand fairly well, minus the actual Squid Game. I had no idea what was happening, but everything else can be said very well. So really enjoyed the show. I would recommend a watch if you haven't seen it. I will say it's maybe like a little unnecessarily gratuitous at times. And I only mean from like a blood standpoint, the amount of, it's not gory, but the amount of blood that you see is incompatible with the amount of blood that an actual human being has in them or would expel under these type of injuries. So
is it like Sam Raimi level or like, you know, like
it's just a little much. And there are like, you know, if someone gets shot, it doesn't matter where in the body they get shot on. They just die immediately. You know, there's like little things like that that are kind of quirky about the show. But as far as logically following these unique threads of thought, it does a really fantastic job at doing that. And really, like, as a viewer, you buy in that, oh, this could really happen. So, or people would really respond this way. So, really, really good watch. Mm-hmm. I do suggest watch from that. The other thing is, we got to watch the Ted Lasso finale. Lauren, you're still not watching it.
I'll catch up. I will. I'm just trying to finish some other shows first because, like, so many things that I like are on right now. So, I'm like, I didn't feel like starting a whole new show yet.
No, that's fine. Andrew, how did you feel about the finale?
I had lots of emotions. There were some really good things, and I have a lot of anger still about a particular character.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's some stuff left up in the air. They did resolve some things. So I thought it was actually, as an episode, I thought it was one of the better ones of the whole season. And they did have a bunch of kind of those like rabbit trail episodes this season and people aren't terribly happy about it, but I liked the end. I'm still very angry. I will carry that anger into the next season. And I think that's what they wanted to have happen. And so from that standpoint, I believe they achieved the objective they set out for, from like a storytelling perspective, but man, I wish I felt better coming out of the finale, because one of the reasons that we turn to Ted Lasso is that good feeling, right? Like that's what set the show apart last season. That's what set it down a different trajectory and why everyone said it was the show we needed right now. And so to leave this season and know that I won't be seeing it again for several months, right? The idea that I'm walking away angry, I don't love that.
Do you feel like disappointed with the like overall story of the second season?
I'm
or
disappointed
is it more just like
with a character? I'm disappointed deeply with a character and the decisions that they have chosen to make in this season.
Yeah. But it's like part of the story. It like that you want to like know what happens next though, right? Like it's not like, oh, this now is interesting.
I want him or her to get their comeuppance. Like, that's what I want. I want there to be justice for this to happen. That's how I feel. What do you think, Patrick?
Interesting.
I think that no one ever says or her unless they really meant him.
That's a good takeaway.
Ultimately, I like the episode. You know, if for those keeping up with the season, I know that some have complained this season's a little odd because it's done a lot of kind of like these character profiles almost. It's done these deep dives into individual characters. And also the humor has changed this year. The humor has moved a little bit more into, it's a bit more over the top this year. It's maybe a little bit less grounded in reality. But I have appreciated the direction. The last couple of episodes have been pretty sad. I mean, like getting into like the two or so before this episode really brought back a more of those good feelings. Like this felt like an earlier episode, in my opinion. They did squeeze in. I mean, in the last 5 minutes is where all of that kind of tension and drama and anger and everything is kind of squeezed in the show. And they basically crammed another 6 weeks of timeline into the last 2 minutes of the show. So it was there was very lot. It's very lot. It's a good.
I was
watch.
Actually gonna let it slide. Like it took everything in me not to say anything, and then you brought it up, and so I'm happy.
So it's a good watch, but then the last 5 minutes are very very dense, and then of course massive cliffhanger for the next season. All of that said, you can have a pretty good idea that it is going to resolve next season. It's been stated multiple times that this is intended to be a 3-season. Arc. The story is meant for 3 seasons. If it was to continue past 3 seasons, which even though of course Apple has expressed interest in that happening, If it was to continue, it may be taken over by someone else, or they may focus on other like characters' side stories. But the stories we're watching now will be resolved next season. So maybe that's a piece of comfort for you.
Yeah.
That's interesting to know. Like, because maybe it's sort of like a Empire Strikes Back moment where they like leave you on the down point to like bring like a lot of action in the finale.
And ultimately, I don't think, I mean, based on the way the show's been so far, everything is just setting up redemption. Like everything is setting up more of that, you know, you can't do so much that you're gone forever type positivity. It's just a different type of positivity. So anyway, ultimately I liked the ending. I thought it was a good cap on a season. Other people have maybe thought was rough. I thought it was a very strong showing. Still just as excited for season three. So last thing for my week, real quick, I'll just tell a story so people know, so they're informed. If you shatter the back of your iPhone, it is aggressively less waterproof. And I maybe did not realize that. I was thinking we got a dual layer here. Like as much money as this thing costs, there's a dual layer.
I feel like that's like saying like you broke the shell of an egg and then you're surprised that part of it leaked out.
That's actually a very good. That's a very good.
I think if
analogy.
I paid $1,000 for an egg, I'd be surprised. So
if I paid $1,000 for an egg, I'd expect it to be hard boiled.
So I went swimming over the weekend. I had been swimming a few minutes before I realized my phone is still in my pocket. Like I had just never taken it out. And but I was thinking, so what? I mean, this have you seen this thing? Is it meant for this? It's not. So initially, like the connector wouldn't dry. I kept getting that whole like it can't charge your phone because the connector's wet. All right, whatever, that's fine. Then I woke up the next
turned on though.
No, it was fine. It turned on, and then I woke up the next morning, and my front facing camera was white. There was a white circle because of the condensation. And it said, like, your true depth sensor has detected a problem. And so I lost my face. Like, I couldn't do anything with my face recognition. So, okay, that kind of sucks. But maybe I can dry it out with a hairdryer. Later that night, one of my three cameras, my macro lens, was completely white with condensation. I don't know how it kept spreading. Like, it wasn't there in the morning. I know it wasn't. And it kept
growing.
You
have hot thighs. I've tried to tell you.
I keep it in my jungle grundle. So and then like later I remember opening my phone and like it was adding a calendar date or something. So then my phone stopped recognizing my SIM card. And then my screen started flickering. So but the whole time it still works. So anyway, I finally realized like, okay, I need to this is right. Like this isn't.
You finally realized it.
Yeah, it's not getting better. The good thing is I have Apple Care, and so $99. They gave me a new phone. It took like an hour to like go through the process of just getting it set up. But really amazing. And when I got the new phone, they went ahead and they loaded it with the new iOS, which is nice. So now I'm like on the new iOS and checking out that stuff. It doesn't seem that much better. It seems about the same.
You hadn't updated yet?
No.
Oh, I love the new iOS. I think it makes it a lot better. There's
like,
a lot of new features.
I haven't updated either, to be honest.
So anyway, now that I have this phone, I'm going to go trade it in on a 13 because I need to have the latest and greatest.
Can I point something out before you move on? If you spent $1,000 on an egg, I would hope it was a Fabergé egg, which is exponentially more fragile than an iPhone. Just pointing that out.
That's okay. True.
Well, I would
was the shattering of your phone, did that happen like recently as well?
No, that happened 2 days after he got the phone.
it was like 2 weeks.
Okay, well,
not a case person?
I wasn't. I felt very confident because I hadn't cracked a phone in years. And when I say years, I mean like a decade.
I was like, I can't go like a month without fucking up my phone.
My last phone had a crack because my wife, I handed the phone to her and she dropped it out of the car onto the driveway and cracked it.
You know, you're contractually obligated to say, my wife. You're contractually obligated.
So my last phone had a crack because of her. I don't get cracks and stuff. So I was just a caseless person. And this new one, I got cocky. Within 2 weeks, I cracked it. Within 4 months, I completely destroyed it. And so now I'm on phone number two.
You got an iPhone 2.
I've wrecked many phones. I definitely have a case, like, and a screen protector, because shit happens.
I mean, it was $100 to replace, which is the price of an OtterBox.
Yeah.
So as long as I don't break it again, I spent the same amount of money.
Yes.
Except I then bought this new case.
to then immediately trade it in.
Wait, and then you want to get a different phone so that case won't even fit.
You're not. Like, you don't do my taxes. I don't know. Like, you're not my money guy. I'll figure it out.
I just realized that.
It actually, you know what, though? The 13 might actually still fit that. I don't know.
Yeah,
if I don't do the Pro or the
Max or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
The 12
you
Pro.
You have the baby.
Okay.
Yeah, I just thought I didn't need the larger one. I just thought I could get the normal brand new iPhone. Andrew, what did you do this week? Did you do anything this week?
Yeah, so I haven't done a ton of stuff. I've been primarily monitoring the Disney Drawtober stuff and then drawing stuff for myself. And that's been fun. It's been good to get back into the old sketchbook. Because I've been drawing a lot. Like, this is probably the most I've ever drawn, like a period of time. I've been doing a lot of drawing on projects, but it's all been outside of my sketchbook. And so it's nice to be kind of logging things that I get to choose again.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been fun. And there's been a lot of excitement around it this year. We did our first giveaway. Lauren helped print stickers for us, cut stickers for us, like special Drawtober stickers.
And they're awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited to get them and send them out. Our first winner was Kreider, actually. Mm-hmm. So it was Sean. Sean, just so you know, just as a way of not having any sort of visual that we are tampering the results of this, the fact that it was someone that I knew and that I liked and who's in the podcast community who won, I almost ran the random generator again to not have it. And then I was like, you know what? That's not fair to Sean. He won fair and square. I just need to roll with it. Not because I didn't want him to win.
Oh, I was going to say, he's also done like multiple entries almost every day, right?
He did one every day. So he had seven entries. So like,
yeah.
And I almost pointed that out in like the in the winning thing, mm-hmm. to say, hey, he won. He also played every day. But I didn't do that because I felt like it was one of those things where, like, you know, he doth protest too much kind of thing.
Sure.
But I just wanted to come clean. I was like, I feel like I even asked Mariana, right? I'm like, should I do this again? Like, it's Kreider. Like, should I do this? And she said, no, go with it. And I'm like, okay, good. I'm going to go.
Yeah.
With it. So anyway, Kreider won. The one that won is the Ursula, which is freaking mm-hmm. killer.
There were
several really good Ursulas. Yours was awesome. And then his was fantastic. And so, there's just been a lot of excitement around that.
Of really cool pieces that everyone is making, to be honest. Like, I see cool stuff every day.
So there's this artist. He goes by the handle The Steel, I think, STEELE. And mm-hmm. He's been doing stuff so we're in our second week. We're halfway through our second, more than halfway through our second week when this episode airs. And he's been doing one every day. And the whole first week, he did one kind of like comic book halftone style. And this week, he's doing every piece is done in like this kind of messy painted, like digital painting style.
Fun.
And so it seems like each week he's doing, other than the prompt theme, he's also doing a stylistic theme, which is pretty cool. And so you can go, I'll put a link to his Instagram page in the show notes. But you can see what I'm talking about. It's been really cool to see what people are putting out there, and doing these little impromptu inspirations have been fun too, to see people kind of, and I've seen some really good responses to it too. Think people are like, oh, that's a really good idea. I'm going to do another one now because of that.
I like the idea you had to do those prompts. I think that's awesome.
It's cool. So that's primarily been what I've been doing. But On top of that, I picked up a game that I tried to buy. I missed it on Kickstarter. Was it Kickstarter? Maybe it wasn't even Kickstarter. But I missed it when it first came out at like the end of 2019, early 2020, I think is when the game actually released. And it's by Letter Games. So the people who do Root, Patrick, you've played Root. The people who do Root and who do several other, what's the cave dungeon one? I can't remember what it's called right now. I have it and it's fantastic. But anyway, that same company and illustrator did this game called Fort. And if you can see what I'm holding up, this is the box cover.
I like the artwork.
A game. Yeah, it's a game for 2 to 4 players, ages 10 and up. It takes 20 to 40 minutes to play. The gist of the game is that you are kids having a sleepover and you are building a fort and you're trying to build the best fort. The way that you do that is you recruit friends. All the cards are friends and each friend has Vast. Yes, Vast is the cave, dungeon crawler that you build, and it's super cool.
A cave, a goblin, whatever it is.
The dragon, Vast. It's the only game that I know of where you can play as the cave, and your goal as the cave is to collapse in on your other players to kill them. It's pretty cool. But everything is done with this same artist, which is like a playful like art style. It's really cute. But yeah, all of the cards are friends that you invite over, and each friend has different abilities that they bring to the table, and each card has a different suit, and the cards can be suited. Like one is a book, one is a skateboard, one is a bottle of glue, one is like a crown, one is a super soaker. So like you're playing as kids, you're trying to build the best fort, and as you go, these are your player boards. I'm gonna try to show you this, see if it'll translate to the screen. These are your player boards. And you have these fort levels that you move up. And as you move up, you get new abilities and new things. I'm trying to get it to focus. I don't know if I can or not. But I don't know if you can see this. It's a
dual... I can see it. I just can't read it. Yeah.
It's a dual... what's it called? Dual level?
Like layer?
Dual layer. Yeah. Do you see this, Patrick? It's got the inset stuff, just like Scythe.
Which are my favorite mats, by the way.
They are, because everything fits in there perfectly, and it's so nice. Nothing's like sliding around the board.
And it's such a good, like, especially when you're learning a game, it's also very helpful to know, like, what you're missing or should be aware of. Like,
this is where, something goes here. Like, very specifically, very tangibly. And what you do to help build your fort along the way, what do you need at sleepovers other than... boxes of toys, which are these little blue meeples, boxes of toys, and pizza. Those are the little yellow ones are pizza. So you get boxes of toys and you get pizza meeples, and then you spend those to upgrade your fort to a different level. So it's a really straightforward, fun looking thing. And I haven't played it yet. I've read all the rules now and I'm excited to play because. Oh, so to say all of that, I was looking for it a year and a half ago when it first came out, and it has been sold out since it released. It finally has been restocked, and I found a copy of it at a local game store the other day just by happenstance, and so I picked it up. So I'm excited to have it.
Have you played it yet?
Not yet. I'm looking forward to it. Maybe I'll bring it with me this weekend, and we can play. There will be 4 of us, so it should be a good time. That's it. There's something else, but I'm going to save it till next week. We've talked about enough stuff so far. So, Lauren, why don't you close us out?
Cool. I've had a busy week. I have family in town, so been doing some fun stuff. Went to a baseball game, all that good stuff. Had lunch with my mom. Nice things. I'm also dog sitting, so that's just different. I'm at a new location tonight, and that's why I don't have my microphone.
Yes.
So I thought I would talk about a couple things that have been going on this week in pop culture land. So finally finished Marvel What If. I know I talked about this when it first came out, but I feel like it's like changed so much throughout the season. And Patrick, you are not into this kind of thing, but Andrew, have you been keeping up with What If?
I have not seen the last three episodes, I think.
Okay.
Maybe the last four.
What was the last one you watched? Do you remember?
No, I can't even go through them in order, and I'll tell you which one I watched.
Oof. Okay. Let me see if I can do it from memory. That'll be fun.
Okay. Yeah.
The first one is like, what if, like Peggy Carter was Captain America?
Yep.
Then it's what if T'Challa was Star-Lord, which is my favorite. What if the world lost the Avengers? The like murder mystery one.
That's the zombie one, right?
No, that this one, the murder mystery one.
Okay.
And then it's the the Doctor Strange one, another really good one.
Ooh, yeah.
Then zombies.
That was the last one I watched, I think.
Okay, then it's the what if Killmonger saves Tony Stark? What if Thor was an only child? What if Ultron won? And I can't say the title of the last one because it's a spoiler. Okay,
yeah, don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I
missed the last four. What if they all died?
Well, no. The finale's sort of a two-parter with the one before. So that'll be the only clue I give.
Okay.
Right. But I think maybe we should wait till you've seen it all. But I do think like the series was pretty fun. I would say it's maybe my least favorite of the Disney Plus Marvel series that we've gotten so far. I think they marketed it to feel like it was going to be a lot more significant than it sort of actually feels now having watched all of it. But we also are leading up into like a new phase of Marvel. So I don't really totally feel like I know what is all coming down the pipe, because like this is like where they, you know, change the chapter and things can be a little different than they were before.
Yeah.
So I think like knowing that we are getting like Multiverse of Madness, there's probably going to be some connections to this like multiversal storytelling. It's just like, yeah, since it's not totally connected yet, this feels a little, like I said, a little significant, I guess, because like it is not like, you know, not tethered to anything else, you know. But there's a lot of potential for it to become that. So I'll be curious to see like where this goes. And I think like next season, like I wonder it, like how bold they're going to be. Like something I was thinking about is like, and this is not a spoiler, this is just like, what if they did something like, what if X-Men, and like could do something where like X-Men have just been there all the entire time. Like that would be crazy.
Like the Eternals?
I mean, that might like tie in very nicely, but I do think it could be cool, like if literally like the X-Men we knew from like the Fox universe were like in the MCU this way, because like that's kind of what if is for. So I think there's some fun things that they could do with that next season, but you'll have to tell me what you think when you finish it all, because I do think the ending was like very strong.
Okay.
Like I really enjoy, like I like all Marvel things, like I feel like their worst effort is usually pretty good still. Like I never felt like bored, and I don't think any episodes are outright bad. It's just I like some more than others. And like compared to the other stuff we've gotten this year, they were fighting, I think, a big uphill battle to win Favor C over Loki or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah. It had a it was stacked against itself. Marvel.
Yeah, yeah, and which is like a great problem for Marvel to have, where like all these things are wonderful. It's just like one is a little better than the other, and this was super fun. And I think the animation is awesome. So
yeah, that's what I was going to say. The animation is phenomenal, and I love the exploration of some of these other storylines that have existed in the comic books, because the multiverse has been in the comic books for years and years and years. This is not a new concept to the world of Marvel. It's just a new concept to the cinematic or telematic, I don't know, whatever we're calling this new hybrid.
Yeah.
It's new to that, but other than that, like it's existed. So it's cool to see zombies, because that zombies.
Yeah, which is like a huge Marvel series for a long time. I don't even know. It probably could still going for all I know, like Walking Dead.
So it's cool to see that, and it was cool to hear so many of the actors. There were some, you know, I didn't get to talk about this at all because it was while I was on my break. But I took minor issue with why like 85% of the actors returned for their voices, but like there's 15% who didn't. And like Dave Bautista has gone on record as saying they never even gave him a call to ask him.
But also like the lines he would have had were so short. They probably didn't want to, like he had like maybe five lines.
Think about Chris Pratt though. He had more than five lines. And
well, okay, so this is really like maybe too inside baseball, but there are things where it's like, okay, Benedict Cumberbatch was probably very easy to get because he's already filming Spider-Man and Doctor Strange. So they're like, hey, come into the studio, buddy. You know,
they were already filming Guardians of the Galaxy too. You know what
I mean? That's why I think okay. I've also heard a theory where it's like the people whose voices they used are like more guaranteed to be in future MCU things than other people, which I think is probably realistic as well.
I don't like that. I don't like the idea that they didn't use Chris Pratt because he's not going to be in the MCU for very much longer.
Oh, come on. I could go off on this, but I think that like Guardians 3 is going to shake that team up hard, which is always what happens in Guardians in the comics. Like they don't have the same team for very long. So I do think that will probably happen.
You hold your tongue, ma'am.
I'm saying this is a giant fan of that team. Like, I love them, but I do think that that's going to happen.
What's the likelihood Rocket grows old swinging on a tire under Groot's arm?
Oh, like the Giving Tree?
Yeah, it's the Giving Tree.
The Giving Groot. another fun thing to get excited about is the first trailer for House of the Dragon dropped, which that was not on my radar at all, really, because stopped thinking about Game of Thrones after they ruined the ending.
Yeah.
And I've paid attention to this show, but nothing really got me super excited until I saw the trailer, to be honest. And like, I don't know what it is, but like actually seeing it all together kind of got me excited again about Game of Thrones. And maybe it's just like remembering the fun times of Game of Thrones and like having watch parties and being excited to like speculate and guess on stuff. And like, I am excited that George R. R. Martin is working on the show. So I'm hoping it will be a little bit more like palace intrigue and less giant spectacle battles, because you have spectacle dragons everywhere this time, because House of the Dragon takes place 200 years before Game of Thrones. And I tried to look this up and I think I got this right, that it is Daenerys's like 4 or 5 times great grandparents, basically. So nobody we know will really be in the show, which I think is pretty cool. Maybe White Walkers, they live forever, but like very few.
Ned Stark's ghost.
He'd be like, went back in time 200 yes. years. Well, ghost, actually, Bran could technically do that, actually. Yeah. So
ghost
maybe Bran
outside
will be
of the normal space-time continuum. So I'm just putting that there.
But anyway, I do think this could be really cool. The cast looks cool. Like it really just like got me excited to see Game of Thrones stuff again, even though I know what happened last time. And I feel like I have like, you know, Phantom Menace pains where it's like, I don't trust this anymore because of what you did to me last time.
Is it a fool me twice situation?
Yeah, that basically. Yeah. Like I was so, like, I love Game of Thrones so much, and I just genuinely believe that ending is trash. And I was talking about this the other day about how much I still just like can't get on board with it. And so like I am excited about Game of Thrones because I love it so much, and this is like the deep world building nerdiness that I love. That is what this show is about. But I just know what they did last time, so I'm like, I do not trust you guys. But I want to be excited.
This is coming from the person who recommended people watch whatever that movie was we talked about last week. Menacing?
Malignant.
Malignant? This is coming from that person. So.
Don't say it like that. Everyone has their own taste and stuff, but like,
what I'm saying is you can find the good in that, and you still, after years, can't find the good in the conclusion of Game of Thrones. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, okay, sure.
You are optimistic enough to always find the good in something, and you can't even find the good in that.
So. I could say like 2 nice things about the entire last season of Game of Thrones, but we don't need to get into this like rabbit hole for me.
Yeah.
I could go on and on. But House of the Dragon does look really cool. It's a very short trailer, but I'm excited. I don't know when it's coming, but my fingers are crossed. I might try and read this book before it comes out, because I have not read it also because of the like stigma I had on Game of Thrones. But now I like want to be excited about it again. So it might be a good segue for me.
Is it a new book?
Yeah. So it's sort of like George R. R. Martin is in theory still writing Winds of Winter, but this is a like appendices type book that he's been writing, like a bunch of short stories and kind of collections of thoughts, very similarly in like. About like Targaryen houses. So that's kind of like where they came up with the idea. And so he is like writing the books, and there's a part 1 and part 2, and 2 is not out yet. Fingers crossed. But yeah,
good luck.
I think
good
the fact that
God
he's working on the show is a good sign probably.
Okay. All right. Is that it for your week?
That is it for my week.
Then let's go guns blazing into our master categories.
Pew pew.
Every week we talk about the dice we rolled the week before. Those dice give us our categories. We pick our topics based on those categories. And I'm going to start this week because I'm talking about business.
Business.
So I was trying to figure out the best way to approach this because I don't know anything about business. I mean, look at me. So I in researching, I came across a few articles, one of which I kind of honed in on, which is the top 10 business trends for 2021. Now, this was published right before 2021. So this was at the end of 2020. So I want to kind of approach this with two things. One, I'm going to read through these 10 and I want us to dialogue as we see fit where we feel like, yes, that we have seen that trend come to fruition. Yes, we think that's a good trend. We should continue it into 2022
sure.
and beyond. Or, oh, that totally fell off. That was a bad prediction. And then there's a couple of things I want to highlight as we go through this process. So this is actually put out by Forbes. This is a Forbes article, and we'll just start right there. I don't think these are in any particular order. It's not like a countdown list, so I'll just read through. Work from home for real. it jumps into the idea that companies had to quickly adapt and figure out how to do all of their operations remotely and move their workforce to a completely remote and what's the word I'm looking for? Like displaced. Work staff. And I think we can say unequivocally that has become the norm. And Lauren, I know you primarily work from home anyway, and Patrick, you were doing the same thing prior to this, but
sure.
The job that I had for the longest time, I think most people within the industry would say that you couldn't do it from home because it was so people-centric. And what we learned is, no, you can still connect with people. You just have to change your priorities and change your intentions. And so the work from home, I think that is a trend that we obviously saw come to fruition, but I also think it's one that's going to stick around. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, because like so many offices have like fully transitioned into working from home after realizing, A, that people like, you know, nothing did change when people were forced to do it. And it's so much cheaper for businesses to like not have to have an office in most cases if like it's something like that, or they can downsize the office. Yeah, right. Yeah. Just downsize the office to a couple conference rooms or something that you would need when you would meet with more people or something like that. So like totally makes sense to me that will be sticking around for a while, I think.
Patrick, you made a face. I don't know that you're fully in agreement with these thoughts.
Well, I was listening to Gary Tan talk about this just the other week about what this is going to mean for companies. His opinion is that it isn't necessarily going to be super long-lived. And there's a couple reasons why, but I think taking a step back, yes, businesses were forced into this, and many didn't want to. Yes, we've seen this big boost of productivity that's kind of proved the at-home model. But here's what Gary Tan believes, and that's that boost in productivity is also because COVID was happening and you couldn't do anything else. So people chose to work instead of being distracted. And so he believes that now with the world opening back up, we'll actually see those productivity numbers potentially go down. And then you'll see these companies start asking for workers to come back to the office. Now, there are companies that have made a big transition. I mean, Shopify is one of those large organizations that have made the my understanding, I believe, is that they now allow all workers to be fully remote. And there are other companies that have made that decision. From my experience, I think that there will be remote burnout as well, because I've been doing remote since before COVID. There is something to be said for having the separation from home, having the commute, having water cooler moments, having visibility with superiors. So I think we'll see more of a hybrid model. I don't think we'll go back to everybody in the office, but I think we'll see more of the two in the office, three at home.
Two in the hand, one in the bush.
And maybe, you know, we might be knocking on the door of a 4-day work week, and then it's more of a 50-50, two at home, two at the office. I think that's going to become increasingly more
normative.
Yes, yeah. But mm-hmm. again, it will be interesting to see if Gary's hypothesis is correct and that these numbers actually go down now that there's more distractions.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. It's all right, new, I'm going to move on. We can dive super deep into all these, so I'm going to try to keep the train moving.
I won't.
Yeah. the next one on here is data as an asset. And I know you have very specific feelings about this, Patrick, so try to contain yourself. But here's what they're saying. So we have heard over the last couple of years how, I mean, everyone knows. I don't even have to talk about data and how big companies use your data to manipulate or to drive sales to you or from you or whatever, right? And privacy has become the name of the game in the big business world, especially when it comes to like technology services and various things like that, right? But what he's talking about here, what they are talking about here, is less about data as a marketing tactic and more about data literacy in companies and boosting data literacy in companies to help glean decision-making insights. Now, that is something that not a lot of people talk about when they talk about data. They tend to talk about privacy and they tend to talk about companies' marketing and all those things. So I don't want to talk about the marketing side because we all have opinions and I think they're all probably pretty similar and we don't need mm-hmm. to have anyone's blood pressure raise. But from this perspective, the idea of considering how companies should boost data literacy, because data is increasingly more and more available, the kinds of data that can be gleaned from different things, literacy on how to read that data and then how to effectively position that or pivot that information into making decisions as a company. What do you guys feel about that?
I think that that's like a good point. Yeah. Like that makes sense to me that like, given that how important data seems to have like become that, like, yeah, you need to also raise like the average worker's like education on it, you know, so that they can use it better, you know, like so that they're more aware and like everything else. And it's like, I think also like, you know, it's like information gathering and like checking your sources and that kind of data thing is like more and more important now as well.
I can't speak to this, but I'll make this point, which is that data, of course, is helpful for validating hypothesis. Relying only on data, I think, can be very dangerous because of how easy it is to misinterpret. And the other piece of this is you have to assume that some of your best ideas will not have the data to support them. Because if they were very clear-cut ideas, other people would already be doing them.
Right.
And so sometimes there's a lot to be said for either trudging into a direction where you don't have data or for purposefully ignoring it. So it's just such a tricky, tricky place to be in. And it is one of those places that there's like a thousand ways to go about it. However, if you're an existing company, you should certainly try to collect data and you should rely on an expert to help you actually make sense of it because it's so easy to misinterpret and misapply.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the point. I think the point is in what he's trying to make or what they are trying to make. I actually don't know if it's a male or female who wrote this, but the point that they're trying to make in this article is that they believe that a trend will be accessing and assessing that information and boosting data literacy. So it's more about bringing people in to train your people how to know what they're looking at so that they can make decisions off of that.
One of my favorite stories, not to belabor this, it's a very good like jumping off point for this. One of my favorite stories is that during one of the wars, they were trying to find ways to keep planes from getting shot down. And so they decided, let's take all these planes that have been shot at, let's map where they have like damage. And then those are the places we're going to reinforce to keep, because those are the places they're being hit. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, that's survivorship bias. The planes that they're mapping came back. The planes that have damage in the opposite areas are the planes that did not return.
Down.
And therefore, they shouldn't have been beefing them up in the area that they had damage. They should be beefing them up in the area they didn't have damage because those didn't survive. That's a very good jumping off point for how data can be misinterpreted. And that's just one small example. So mm-hmm. if you want to start somewhere, start with survivorship bias and follow that trail.
Yeah. All right. These next couple ones, I'm just going to kind of bop through because I think we understand And I think we don't need to talk too much about
we're
it.
Here. We're here.
Business model innovation. We recognize that how businesses work. You guys both have run your own businesses over the last year and a half of a pandemic. I have been heavily invested and involved in the business that I work with. And we have had to innovate. The business model idea has like flipping everything upside down.
Yeah.
100%. That trend definitely came true and it will continue to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is automation. And yeah. trying to take as much stuff out of human hands and not necessarily to remove jobs, but to remove margin of error, is very much, something that we have seen become more the norm, and I don't see it going away anyway.
But also to remove jobs and save money.
It does also remove jobs and save money. Yes.
Trucking industry is going to be radically different in the next five years.
Yeah.
Fast food industry is going to be radically different in the next 5 years.
Right. And
what's happening now with fast food restaurants not being able to find employees, some people could believe that's going to have the effect that they're going to raise their rates that they pay. What it may actually do is speed up automation and replacing those jobs.
Exactly.
And then they just pay like one manager a little bit more.
Yep.
To watch all the robots.
So speaking of pay, one of the things that they predict is decentralized finance. And so I'll just read this one directly because I think this actually says it better than I could kind of break it down. As a result of the economic turmoil of COVID-19, capital markets continue to be nervous. This creates a challenge for businesses that want to raise capital to expand or start a new business. One solution for raising capital has been crowdfunding, blockchain technology, and other decentralized finance options. This will be a big trend in 2021 that will allow businesses to acquire capital easier than through traditional channels. 100% this has happened. Now, you can argue the stability of these different channels and methods through which we gain things, capital, but we have for sure seen a trend toward this direction, and I don't see it changing anytime soon. I'm going to give you an example. There is we talk about Kickstarter all the time. That's a primo crowdfunding website. A different model that I have just seen this past week, there is this new game coming out, and I think it's called Pathfinder. I should have actually looked up the name of it before I started this.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's called Pathfinder, and it was direct marketed. I got an email for it. I don't think I even saw it anywhere else. I got an email for it. So I wonder, you know, where they got it from somewhere. But rather than a traditional crowdfunding where they go through a crowdfunding site, their business model has been to do, you invest in the game for $1, and you paying that $1 reserves your first edition copy of this game and gives you all of these perks. But you pay that $1 now, immediately. And then when the game is available, you are the first person to get an email to respond and finish purchasing your first edition copy. It's a different strategy. And I thought the game looks really interesting. It's a game that's I'll talk more about. Like, I'm not going to get into the game, but it's intended to get you up and moving and doing things like a choose your own adventure type thing, but in real life. And I thought, cool business, but I'll pay a dollar right now just to lock this in, and then later on I can choose whether or not I want to keep it or not, or if I want to continue to, you know, to pay the balance of it. Different kind of business model, still crowdfunding, but in a very different way. And so I'm interested to see how these different models continue to shape and morph and grow and change as they go. All right, virtual interfaces. Again, we don't have to talk much about this, but companies now recognize that they have to provide more experiences in-store, air quotes, in-store experiences for people without them physically coming to tangible shops. So tapping into things like augmented reality, virtual reality, mixed reality, all of these different technologies, we've started to see more and more this happen with conferences, with showrooms, with, you know, like now on your phone, if you can see products where they're gonna be in your house by just holding up your phone and tapping into your augmented reality. And so more and more the virtual interfaces, I don't think that's gonna go away anytime soon.
I hate it.
100% makes sense. You are a tangible person. You do like to touch things, which is funny to me because you are so digital. Like everything you do is digital, but you as a person are a very tactile person. And so it's I can see that war waging within you. Going from global to local, and this is the idea that we have seen supply chains force this idea, right? It has forced it's been cheaper to purchase things from China or from overseas, right? But supply chain has crumbled because people have been out of work. Companies have shut down. There's all these things. And so the idea of focusing more on locally sourced things is a much more it's much less disruptive for your business when you don't have to rely on shipping containers from 3,000 miles away. And so we're seeing a rise in shifting to local over global. What do you guys think about this? Because so Lauren, you order mm-hmm. products regularly.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about this trend and whether or not it's actually on point or not?
I think it's completely true because all the shipping stuff is just like ridiculous now. And like, even to just mail a letter to Europe, the only time frame that the USPS will give you is 50 days. So like, Whoa. That is not at all a viable use of the mail. Like,
yeah.
You cannot, like, no customer is going to like that. That doesn't work. And like, I'm used to it when I order like pins and stuff because they come from China to like plan for 3 or 4 weeks. But now it's taking like 3 or 4 weeks for production and 3 or 4 weeks to ship it to me. So like, it is, as soon as there's an American pin factory, they're going to be busy. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
And like, I know lots of other people who have other issues with other stuff, like t-shirts are scarce, lumber, books are really hard, like paper because of the lumber thing. So like books are hard. And then there's just stuff like stuck in shipping containers all over the world, like, which is another problem. So yeah, because, and like, even like our grocery store is like not stocked the way that it used to be. So I do think that there's like a big shift coming.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a little bit of a tangent, but I also think like, basically like the post office is going to be a disaster this Christmas because of all the stuff that they've been like doing. And then they can finally kick out DeJoy and it'll be great, or like start getting better again. But like, that guy has no interest in improving things. So it's just going to get worse and worse.
Yeah. A lot to be said about that. And I think we are still learning what the ramifications of that are for manufacturing. I mean, I think that's just the reality of it.
All right, I think the next one, Christmas is going to be a big eye opener for a lot of people because it's when most people order the most stuff, you know, and then it's going to be like already choked system pressed upon.
As long as you ship your gift by October 14th, they'll get it in time. That's always
the case. You know that old mantra.
Black Friday starts like 2 weeks before
the
Halloween.
Friday
this
before
year.
the before the night before Christmas.
I already shipped my Valentine's gifts just to
good
be
idea.
Safe.
Yeah,
for 2023. For 2023.
You're safe then, yeah.
Who'd you send them to? Your mom?
No, I sent them to your mom. All right.
Backfired.
The next one is purposeful and meaningful. We've seen this trend happening for the last several years, especially with the current generation. But the trend to have more purpose and meaning, not just in the products that we purchase, knowing that our stuff is doing something, it has a story, it's making an impact. But also in the jobs that we have. And so going back to what you were saying, Patrick, about why we're seeing such a hard time with fast food restaurants or, minimum wage jobs being so hard to fill right now. I think this is part of that. I think part of it is that, people are afraid to get back out there in the world and because of COVID, they're afraid to interact and all that stuff. But I think this is maybe more a part of it. People want to see a purpose and a meaning in their jobs. And it is hard to find a purpose if all you're doing is just flipping burgers or if all you're doing is just being a gas station attendant. Like, I think there's an idea, a deeper idea behind this where the world has shifted. we've had to pull back and we've all had to be home. While we were all home, I think people got introspective, and it's a lot harder to get someone to come back and come to their job when they don't feel a sense of greater purpose or greater meaning behind it, unless you're going to pay for the lack of purpose and lack of meaning.
Yeah, I mean, this is the second time I've heard this in 24 hours. Someone else yesterday was talking about this idea as well. That's true for some people. I think that people are motivated by different things. Some people are motivated by autonomy. Some are motivated by stability. I don't know why I keep saying motivated, and it's maybe I'm trying to say motorboated. I don't know. Some people are motivated by it's autonomy. It can be stability. It can be title. It can be pay. It can be flexibility. There's a number of reasons why you choose the role you do and you choose to stay in the role that you do. And I think if you're not fulfilling some of those other ones, if you're not giving autonomy or stability or whatever, you need to increase. Like if these inputs don't exist, you may have to increase other inputs.
Right. There are levels.
Money's a very easy one to kick in. So, I think there is something to be said for people not just demanding more money out of greed, but having some level of self-respect and saying that I my time is going to be worthwhile, and if it's not worthwhile, then I'm not going to do it. Yeah. And being oppressed because you don't make enough money to ever exit the circle right. that you're in, that is ultimately not getting anybody anywhere. And ultimately, we've been fed a lot of lies about the ability to progress from those roles, and it just doesn't happen. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I see a couple sides of it. I think some people, the motivation's there. Some people it's not. I don't think everyone falls blanketly in that category.
Sure. Okay, the two final things. One is social engagement and the idea that there'll be a big push this year and into the future where people, it's kind of off of that purpose and meaning, a little bit of a spinoff of that, where people want to see less of a curated and polished social media social media presence. They want to see more behind the scenes stuff. They want to see more authentic connection things. And I think we see this with Survivor. Survivor has changed very dramatically. It's just a weird statement to say dramatically, but in subtle ways. Mm-hmm. I say dramatically sure. because they've changed a lot of things in subtle ways. That is showing a more behind the scenes look. And this is the first time in 40 seasons where we actually get to see the cameramen and women from time to time, where we're seeing the games pulled back from a different perspective. We're seeing more and more of that. And I think it's just true. We don't want to see all the glitz and glamour anymore without knowing that there's like realness behind it. Too polished feels fake.
I also think like in just like that reality TV thing, that's also happening quite a lot in more of the like Bravo type reality shows, like where they've shown kind of like breaking the fourth wall moments, I guess, of that like behind the scenes stuff. And I think it's also just like people are so much more educated on like how TV works
right.
now that like showing that is more interesting.
Yes, it is. And it's pretending like it's something more than it is going to be off-putting to the people at large. So the final one that I want to say is, that they have on the list is sustainability. And the idea that sustainability has been an issue for a while, and talking about like what is sustainable? How do we continue to produce products? How do we continue to put things out there in a way that's responsible and sustainable? And here I 100% think this trend is very, almost to the point of mockery, very much trendy. Like doing things in a sustainable way, I think it's actually very good, but the word sustainable has become a trendy word.
It's the new innovative, but not sure. that neither of these things are good. It's just like that became like a big buzzword, I think, for a long
right.
time.
Yeah, synergy. Like that, right? We see the word sustainable circled a whole bunch on a whiteboard like that. But I think it's actually, I think people are doing it. Companies are doing it. There's a company right now that I just saw today. It's called Zero Waste Store. That's the name of the website. But this particular product I love, it's upcycled glass cups. They're 100% recycled glass. Actually, I'll drop the link into the chat right here so you guys can see them. They are 100% recycled glass. You get two of them for $24, roughly. They're green tinted and clear options. They are made out of Topo Chico bottles that have been saved from landfills.
That's funny.
And so each one is a little unique on its own, but they are super cool looking glasses. Nothing crazy about them. That's like, I think if people saw them in your cupboard, they wouldn't think, you know, twice about it. They're not like ultra modern or ultra. They're just sustainably sourced, and you can feel good about it. And I think we're going to see more and more stuff like this as we go, as technology catches up and we are able to do more with recycled materials, as we are able to recycle more things than we ever have been able to before because of technology. I think we're going to see more and more stuff like this. So anyway, that's a lot of stuff to say, but I think business has shifted a lot in the last 2 years. And I think we'll continue to see some of these trends even swing further the pendulum in that direction. So
yeah,
that's me. Lauren, why don't you talk about some food?
I will. So I think pretty much in the next 2 months, anytime that I draw food, I'm going to have to talk about Great British Baking Show. Because in addition to having a watch party every week for the show and loving it to death, we're also doing the bakes along with it. So that like is my like a big chunk of my week now, because I will like write my own recipes and like plan these out pretty elaborately. Like, and this last week was like no exception. I spent the entire day yesterday baking and still ran out of time. That is like the number one thing when I watch the show now, where I'm like, I just don't understand how they get any of this done in this amount of time. Like, it's just not like, I know they get practice and stuff, but it seems so hard, and they don't have to do dishes, which I've talked about before. Cause like, I only have like one mixing bowl or whatever. So like,
I would be a fantastic baker if I didn't have to wash dishes.
I would be a lot faster, that's for sure. But anyway, the one that we chose to do this week was super fun. We did a showstopper, and I made a Super Nintendo out of gingerbread, basically.
You did?
Yes, the challenges this year have been like the weirdest showstoppers I feel like ever. The themes are so weird and specific. The first episode was something like, build a gravity-defying cake sculpture that represents your favorite childhood memory. And then the one that we picked was make a interactive biscuit sculpture of your favorite toy from childhood as well. And so we were like, are all of the, like, you know,
childhood
showstopper challenges going to be like weird childhood memories that like we're all going to like psychoanalyze by the end of this season? But it was fun. So I tried to make do the Super Nintendo, because that was definitely a toy that I had. I had like a pattern all set up that I like made myself in Illustrator, and it was like 6 pages of patterns. It had to be significantly cut down due to lack of dough and some other things. And like once I actually put it together, some things didn't look the way I thought they would. So I just changed it on the fly, and then had some extra cookies to use as support on the inside, which definitely helped quite a lot. I felt like a true engineer this week. Like sometimes on the show, like you see people who come with like special tools and you're like, oh, what a joke. And then I'm like, oh, I needed that thing that they had. That's like the only way you can do this. Like, I don't know how else you get them so perfect. Like somebody I remember one time had like invented like not invented, they just brought like little like platforms that they would set on either side of where they were rolling the dough so that the rolling pin can't go past that, and so it's perfectly even. It is very freaking hard to roll like perfectly even dough
thickness all the way.
Especially when you're making big pieces, like because I made mine a little bit larger than an actual Super Nintendo, and so like the top was basically like 8.5 by 11 almost. So like that's a pretty large piece of gingerbread to not break and to get like nice and flat. But it was a good challenge. It was really fun. I love doing this stuff every week, and I post pictures both in our Slack and our Great British Bake Off channel. And then on my Instagram, I'm posting stuff. My other friend who participated this week made Jenga, which was both genius and infuriating. So I'm like, oh, you came up with like the best and easiest idea, but it still like worked really well. His tasted a million times better than mine, but didn't work great as a Jenga game because the cookies themselves were a little too sticky, you know, to like be able to pull apart from each other when they were stacked. But they did stack up nice and look really pretty, and they tasted so good. Mine looked better than it tasted. But right. I think that's always like a big challenge when you're doing the showstoppers, to like actually make them taste good and look really cool. That's another thing that is just like super impressive to me whenever I'm watching the show, because like they tear them apart when they judge those ones. And so they're eating them. And mine was like, I was like, you can eat it if you really want to.
That was always my issue. I always thought that what's his name? The cake.
Paul Hollywood.
Ace of Cake.
Oh.
Duff.
Yeah, yeah, Duff Goldman or whatever. I always thought his cakes looked 100% better than the cake boss, right? Buddy Velasquez. Yeah. But the cake boss's cakes always looked like they tasted better because they used less fondant and they used more buttercream and they would put more. And I would always think, I would always judge this cake visually and win every time. But if it came down to something I wanted to eat, I'm going to eat the cake boss's cake.
I totally agree, because fondant is one of the grossest things I've ever eaten. I don't know if you guys have ever had it.
Yeah,
it tastes not pleasant.
It tastes like fruit stripe gum after it's been chewed for 15 minutes.
Yeah, it has like no flavor. The texture is awful. And like it just like sticks to your teeth so weird. I'm not a fan at all. I've made it and I've eaten it, like, and I've bought the store kind. It's only for looks, in my opinion. Like, if I ever get it on a cake, I just take it off and eat whatever's underneath, because it just doesn't taste good. I hate it. It's disgusting. But it makes your cake look really fancy and nice. Style over substance, the eternal bake-off battle. Have you guys been watching this season at all?
I'm only one episode in.
Do you have any favorites? I'm just curious. Because we like to just choose people on the first episode and kind of like bet on our horses throughout the whole race.
I don't have enough care to pick someone that early in the season. Mm-hmm. It took me about 49 minutes of the 50-minute episode to get over that stupid intro. So I wasn't in the right frame of mind to be picking. Yeah.
Please don't. So bad.
Yeah, it was painful. So I know. I'm sorry.
Give me another episode or two, and then I'll tell you who my favorites are.
Okay, yeah. You have to pick a top three and a dark horse. That's what we did. I'm loving this season. I love every season. I think Jurgen is probably a very strong contender who will go very far. And I just have to say, like, after this week, I was cracking up because, like, I keep just joking in our little watch group that, like, he has the same accent as Werner Herzog. So all I keep thinking is, I want to see the baking, you know. And then he made a baby cake this week. And I was like, oh, my God, it is all coming together. They know what I'm doing. But he's great. I love everyone.
Love it. Is that it?
That's it. I don't have too much to say. Join our Great British Baking channel in Slack. We are having fun in there if you're into the show, and posting all of the baking challenges. I know Mav Trav is doing all the technical bakes with his family, and they are very cute pictures to see. I love it. So always worth checking out.
Okay. And you can do that by heading over to our website and checking out the Slack icon to join that. All right, yes, Patrick.
Thank you.
Take us to the finale.
All right, let's put some more stuff in our mouths, y'all. Here we go. I had games, and this is a game of sorts. This is called The Duel. It has a little subline featuring two Pepper X chips. So here's the thing. You probably saw the one-chip challenge, the Pocky one-chip challenge that went on a couple years ago. Big deal, made it through all the social rounds, and great fun, I'm sure. The little chip comes in a little coffin. You eat it, you die. Hilarity ensues. And because that did so well, that has kind of spawned The Duel. So I had heard, and several people on you know, YouTube and things that review these contests said that the Pocky chip was pretty gross. Mm-hmm. And so two kind of well, one giant in the pepper industry, and then one other chip manufacturer came together to kind of create the next evolution of the one chip challenge, and that is the Duel. So here's what it is. It's two chips. I'm going to show these to you, by the way. It is two chips. These are them right here. Each chip, so the Pocky chip was a combination of Scorpion and Carolina Reaper. The Scorpion is the third hottest chili in the world. Carolina Reaper is still currently number one hottest pepper in the world. Scorpion might be too. And so this is instead Pepper X. Now, to explain that real quick, Carolina Reapers do not grow naturally. These have been crossbred and created over time by Smokin' Ed Curry, who owns Pucker Butt Pepper Company. He has a very great story, by the way. And so he bred that, but over time, he decided that the Reaper was too mild for his taste. It just didn't do enough for him. So through continuing to crossbreed peppers, intentionally breeding
and
peppers
burn
that
every
have high
taste bud in his mouth,
Scoville measurement, he managed to create something called Pepper X. It is still unofficial. He claims it's twice as hot as a Reaper.
Whoa.
But it is still unofficial. Guinness has not measured the Scoville unit of it yet. However, this is now the pepper that's in the new Last Dab sauce that Ed Curry also makes for Hot Ones. So if you ever watch the show, they talk about the Last Dab. I think it's new as in the last two seasons. They changed out the Last Dab sauce. It now uses this Pepper X that Ed Curry created. So
evil.
That is the pepper side of the equation. The chip side of the equation is a company called Feast and Fury, who makes Kraft potato chips. And they make some great flavors. They make everywhere from a mild flavor, which is just a spicy ketchup. And they go all the way up to, in like horseradish, very mild. Up to like they have a habanero and they have a ghost pepper. So they make chips and they make them in different spice levels. None of them massively spicy, but enough that you can grab a bag. And if you enjoy pepper, then there you go. However, they decided to apply Pepper X to chips. And so now we have two chips coated in Pepper X, unofficially hottest pepper in the world, supposed to have great flavor. And the way that the Duel works is that you get another person. You each take one chip and you eat it. And the first person to reach for a drink loses. Now, whoever wins the Duel gets this coin. This is what you get. That's actually Ed Curry's face on it.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's Ed Curry on one side, and it's Feast and Fury, the chip maker, on the other side. And so this is the prize for winning the Duel is the coin. Outside of that, box design, pretty cool.
Like, yeah, it's beautiful.
Yep.
It looks like a good whiskey brand.
That's exactly what it looks like. And like the internal stuff, this is like the actual rule card that explains how you actually do the Duel. And then, of course, tells you to post on socials and all that kind of stuff. Everything is done very well. This challenge is it's on sale right now for $15. However, they also have a limited edition version that comes in like an actual like wooden box. And I think it's like $75. It was $100. It's all discounted now. This has been out for a couple of months. It's not brand new, but it is still available. So if you try to go do the one chip challenge, you can't find those online anymore. You have to try to get them just through like a third party retailer. But you can still buy the Duel from the website if you want to. So I followed several people that have done this challenge. One of them, in fact, we were talking about this the other day, that if you remember the documentary on Netflix that was like Unique Sports, episode one was cheese rolling. Well, episode three, I believe, of that series was Chili Heads. It was pepper eating competition. And they went to a pepper eating competition. Well, there was a woman in that show that got second in the competition. She does the Duel on her and her husband's YouTube channel. And she says that not only is it one of the hottest things that she's eaten or the hottest challenge she's done, at one point she talks about she's having trouble controlling her breathing and she starts like freaking out. And this is someone that
who's
competitively eats very, very hot peppers. So anyway,
I have questions.
Lauren, I bought this for you and I to do.
Yes.
No. I forfeit. I have no pepper.
Yeah, Lauren is drinking defense. Right now.
Yeah, like I'm sweating even thinking about this. That's awful. Okay, who are you going to play against? Not me. I'm out.
Great. And then, oh, I thought there were more questions.
Yeah, that's one.
Great. Short answer, I don't know. It's possible that I don't have the stomach for this. I mean, we all know that the Carolina Reaper, we all know how that ended.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you going to film
for
it?
For those that don't know.
Like the last time, is that a possibility?
For Long those that don't know, I have eaten a Reaper. And I don't know that I want to experience it again. So what we might do is like take a chip, but then like four people eat one chip. You know, like break it into smaller bits. It's still going to suck, but it won't be like a whole bucket of suck.
Yeah.
Then is it still then amongst those like four people who will get the coin?
I'm keeping the coin. I'm not an idiot.
See, I think
you're like,
anybody,
I want it. I'm rigging this to win.
I think in order to get other people to participate, you need to. There needs to be something, even if it's not the coin. Maybe it's like, you buy them a drink, right? Like you buy them the drink afterwards. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, well, again, Mackenzie's party's coming up. It may be a good time to break this out.
Yeah. There will be two murders in Savannah.
Because I'm sure she's going to love, of course, multiple adults puking in the bathroom during her party.
That sounds like a great party.
That's what you get every girl. That's what you get every girl. It's what they don't tell you that they want. That's what I've learned.
So yeah,
they want
that's the
their
goal,
friends
everybody.
To throw up at their birthday party.
The key to every good marriage, and now listen to me, I know about this stuff, is that you want to make sure you do all of those things on their birthday.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you want to get this, feastandfury.com or I believe theduelchip.com is two places you can check it out. So
the dual chip. All right. Mm-hmm. D-O-O-L.
Yep. All right. Dual.
I think that's it for this episode. You can find all of the stuff that we talked about, all the things that you can eat, all the things that you can buy, all the things that you can watch, and all the things that you can try. Over at mofone.network, where you can find the show notes and links, and you can find a whole plethora of other things, including an archive with hundreds and hundreds of episodes, with guests all from all over the different places of the corners of the world.
Beautiful.
I stand by that. For as good as the setup was, I feel like that's got to give me some favor and some grace moving into the back half of this. Because that was on the fly rhyming, and I'm not going to lie, that felt good. But you can find all that stuff on the website. You can also connect to our Slack channel, and you can become a patron. Patrons got a lot of extra stuff this episode, and they got a lot last episode too. So $2, $4, $6, head over to patreon.com/mofonepodcast to contribute to the show that you love so, so much. And speaking of shows you love, head on over to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, all the different places, and like, rate, review, and subscribe. When you review the show, it helps us out so, so much. We want to read those reviews, so please do it. Take the 5 minutes it's going to take you to do it, and we will read it on air. It honestly, it brightens our day. Lauren has cried every episode for the last 18 months because we haven't gotten a new review. We can't bear to watch her cry anymore. So please leave us a review on iTunes so that we can read it on air. Is there anything else that I'm missing? I don't think so.
We didn't roll categories either.
It's time to roll our categories. All right. Are you going, Lauren?
Yeah, sure. I got a 6, which is TV. Yay.
You love
witches?
It. Witches TV.
Witches TV. Yeah, perfect for, and then a 2. So,
present.
Yes. Thank you.
That is literally your best topic.
Mm-hmm.
That is.
I rolled a 1.
I'm in a happy place.
He rolled a critical fail. No, that just means it's random.
Oh, wait. It means we get to pick,
we
right?
Get to
y'all
pick.
Choose.
Yeah, we get to pick.
And I got future, by the way, so you get to choose for me.
We will choose by Friday of this week. We'll tell you when we're all together. We'll figure it out.
Okay.
That's one thing, too. I'm excited to talk about that next week. All of us hanging out together. All right. And we'll rolled a 3 and a 2.
3?
Yeah.
3? All right. Where's 3? Gotcha. You also got TV, which means they got to do it again.
Okay. Here we go. Go for it, Lauren.
I got a 9 this time, Sue. So toys, no.
I got a 9. I'm not even kidding.
Okay, great. Do it again.
Ah, that sucks.
You roll first
totally
this time.
For toys. Okay, I'll roll first this time. I got a 14.
That'll be art. Great.
Sweet.
And then I got an 8, which will be design. Great, great.
All right, cool.
I was going right, across and I'm like, is this art? Are you joking? And I was like, design is underneath it. Thank God.
The outro that we just said a minute ago, there it is again. Find the social medias just at M of One Podcast everywhere. You can watch. Oh, I did want to say this. I listened to the episode with Andrew Kolb on the Dungeons and Designers. He is a fantastic Dungeons and Dragons player. As for as good as he is as a DM, he is incredible as a player. Like, 100% lives into the character, and he was playing what is probably the best character he could possibly play, a very friendly robot. Man, go check out the Dungeon Designers crew. They have a lot of cool stuff going on over there. That's on our YouTube channel. And then we have a new drawing board coming up in the next week or two where Doc is doing one of the drawing prompts from Disney Drawtober. So stay tuned to that. And speaking of Disney Drawtober, contribute. Tag it at Disney Drawtober and hashtag Disney Drawtober so that we can share it and have fun and you can get entered to win fun stuff. On that note, you can find me at Andrew Sale with 3s instead of E's on the internet. Lauren.
I'm Not Cool Co. everywhere.
And Patrick.
And I'm not on the internet.
So on that note, I'm Andrew.
I'm Lauren.
I'm Patrick.
Peace out.
Adios.
Bye.